How best can an independent business working on behalf of other businesses represent that brand without alienating their potential clients? I mean, how can a BPO retain their own brand identity while still being able to be agile to their clients' needs?
It's that element of having your own cultural identity, if you like, as an outsourcer and what you stand for, but allowing your staff to get close enough to your client's brand because they've got to understand it inside out because they're speaking to those customers day in, day out, and they are the eyes and ears of that brand. Those contacts and staff will probably have more contact with end customers of a client's brand than anyone within that client environment.
Welcome to Talk Time with Max Contact, your go-to podcast for everything contact center related. Join us as we dive into the incredible world of contact centers and explore the latest trends, innovative strategies, and cutting-edge technologies that are reshaping customer interactions. In each episode, we're joined by industry experts to share their practical insights and advice to elevate your contact center performance. Whether you're looking to enhance operational efficiency, improve team management, or understand the impact of AI in contact centers, you're in the right place.
Welcome to another episode of Talk Time with Max Contact. I'm your host, Sean McIver. In this episode, we're joined by Neville Doughty, Partnership Director at CCP, also Senior Lead of Strategic Projects at the UN World Food Programme. He's an advocate of situational CX, a mentor, a leader, and after more than 22 years in the game, he knows a thing or two about partnerships and CX strategies. Welcome, Nev. Have I missed anything?
No, I think there's plenty there to keep us busy. Great to be here.
Thank you very much for making the time to join me today. I want to just say UN World Food Programme. That sounds both incredible and incredibly intimidating. Can you just outline a little bit there?
It's a little bit unusual. I've been very fortunate to be part of what is a fantastic organization. Basically, contact center panels supported World Food Programme in finding a global outsource partner. So the idea was, as part of a new strategy, to set up what turned out, nobody told me at the time when I got involved, but what turned out to be the first NGO to have a truly global contact center. So got a team there, supported by one of contact center panel's partners, that are dealing in six different languages: phone, email, chat, WhatsApp, social media monitoring. So most diverse team you've ever had the privilege to meet. And basically, they're looking after the supporters. So if you or I decided to give a regular gift to World Food Programme, then they do all of the customer service stuff and all the what we call supporter care around it. But World Food Programme's one of the biggest organisations that people don't really know exists. They have more planes than KLM, which I think is a great fun stat.
Wow, that sounds absolutely amazing. And from that, I'm clearly you're passionate, and I'm going to quote you here because I always like to do this. Here we go. You quote yourself as being a passionate advocate of situational CX and the benefits to delivery that can be achieved through effective partnership, working, and management of change. So let me open by kind of just unpacking that a little and saying very directly, why is it important to pair the right business with the right outsourced partner?
Great question. And this situational CX thing is something that I've been there for a while. It's just this point that as a customer, what's going on in your life could influence how you want that item that you're trying to deal with to be managed. So effectively, if I've got a problem, I'm trying to fix it one day, and I'm at home and I've got time and I want to chat to someone, I love to pick up the phone and deal with it. But if I'm on a train and I'm traveling somewhere and I'm short on time and I'm not going to sit on that train and talk about that issue at that point, I'm going to want to be able to use a different channel. I'm going to want to be able to do it via chat or even WhatsApp or an asynchronous message type. So for me, it all comes down to having a partner or an outsourcer, very often in my background, who can deal with what your customer needs at that moment in time. So it's recognizing that customers are complex. They have differing requirements. You know, we're talking a lot about vulnerability these days as well. And just understanding that that customer may even have a different requirement based on where they are on a given day and what else is happening in their life.
Understood, and that makes sense. I think I've got a bit of a sense of this, but I think for the sake of really being very much black and white on this one, can you maybe give an example of what bad looks like and by comparison, how this then shapes the good?
So I suppose it's that point where you've got a customer who's trying to get in contact with you and it's the age old, oh, well, we're only open 9-5 Monday to Friday. A little bit, you know, probably a bad example in some ways, but if you think of yourself as a customer of your local doctor's surgery, and, you know, it can be very confined in terms of when you can make contact. Whereas if you look at other organizations who are doing a much better job, I had to make contact with Sky last week. They said that I'd not returned my box that I didn't need anymore. And first option, try and do it via the web chat. Well, do you know what? For a simple process, that might work. But then when I needed to sort of dig in a bit further, it got a little bit harder. And in the end, I'm like, I want to speak to someone. I want, you know, and I debate, I want to cancel, even though I already had. The agent I got through to, she was fantastic. She absolutely understood why I was calling, why I needed her. So when I got through, fantastic. And clearly she was empowered to make the right decisions, to do the right things. But I think it is just that, how do you make yourself available in the right places to speak to your customers, going and hanging out in the places where they can make contact? Obviously, some people might want to deflect contacts. That's fine, so long as you've got a solution that works.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the critical things for me is it's, as you say, it's meeting customers where they stand. It's not obfuscating your contact mechanisms. If you have a phone number, not burying that behind a number of pages and making sure that customers have a range of ways to get in touch with you that suit them. I'm going to offer a counterpoint to this. So I'm a big company looking to outsource my contact center solution. Doesn't it all really come down to cost at the end of the day?
It's a good point. I think it depends what you consider as your costs. So I've had 25 years in outsource, and effectively what you can do to mitigate costs, and everyone sees, if you like, outsource, you know, contact center is a potential cost of failure, isn't it? You know, you've got people contacting you generally because something's gone wrong. When you're looking after a water company or a, you know, utility, no one ever rings up and says, oh, the gas was particularly warm this morning. You know, it's not like someone rings up to say, great job, guys, keep doing it. So absolutely, contact centers are, historically, they carry a cost unless you're doing outbound sales or a retention or something like that. But then you're into cost per sale. But realistically, looking and going, right, okay, how do we minimize those costs? And, you know, I've seen operations where people have said, oh yeah, but the hourly rates, you know, that's the lowest hourly rate. But if you've got issues with staff retention, so people are leaving, you've got training costs when you have recruitment and training when you're having to backfill roles, or you've got repeat contacts, so you've got customers who are calling back because the original contact wasn't dealt with correctly. So the headline cost might be lower, but then, oh, it's taking 3 attempts to resolve that query, which infuriates the customer. So if you're in a market where the customer can go, do you know what, I'm leaving, I'm going elsewhere. So costs can take on so many different complexions. And I once started a meeting, sat down, and project manager comes in, and he looked around the room and said to us, room full of contact center managers, and he said to us, 22% of your staff are of more use to me sat in the canteen. And you're like, whoa, what a way to start, how to alienate your audience before you begin. But what he talked through was quite interesting in terms of saying, right, these agents are generating repeat contacts. Those repeat contacts are taking longer to deal with than the initial contact. Therefore, they're creating more work than they are doing. And you're going, yeah, okay, that's a good point.
You've mentioned 25 years in the outsourcing industry. What are some of the challenges or dangers that come with an outsourced contact center? For example, the costs or risks associated with outsourcing your customer contact point.
Great question. And think back to so many that I've seen and been part of that have run well, or times when you're going, this isn't quite where we need it to be. And, you know, for me, the key things about outsourcing is making sure that you've got an equitable partnership at the start of it. So actually going into something where if you're a client and you need to outsource activity, you're going to respect that that outsourcer's got to pay their bills, treat the staff fairly, do things right. They've got to have a commercially sustainable relationship with you as the client. As an outsourcer, I think you've got to, you know, respect the fact that you have been given the, you know, the most treasured thing of that client. You know, you've been given their customer, you've been given their brand. You know, someone said to me one time about, you know, it's like someone giving you their baby. You've got to look after it. You've got to make sure that it's cared for. So I think, you know, you've got to work in this way that you've got this respect to each other as an outsourcer and a client. That you've got this equitable theme is something that's really key to myself and to Phil and the contact center panel team, because it's got to work for everyone. And that's the only way that you're going to deliver the best outcome for the end customer. If an outsourcer's not able to make something work commercially and sustainably, then they'll make bad choices. So it's about making sure you've got the right partner that can do the job that you need them to.
Again, I agree with you on that point, and I've seen that myself, having worked in a number of BPOs throughout my career as well. I guess part of my research for this, and I remembered back to my days in working in BPOs, and the obvious answer there was around brand and reputation. They were, you know, key central pillars around the principles for any BPO. To what extent is that still the case? Is that a fair assessment to make?
It is a fair assessment to make. And I think you look at things like client brands that everyone's happy to put a comment on, whether it's Trustpilot, FIFA. So brand is key. And, you know, that ability to ensure that service is delivered in line with a brand. So I can remember attending a marketing event once and everyone was kind of talking about, you know, how you get your brand across, how you do this. And no one was sort of stopping and going, hang on a moment. Once you've sold it, who's delivering on the long-term brand promise? So from a client perspective, facing out to customers, brand. But then the other thing, despite there being so many outsourcers, contact centers, on another level, it's quite a small industry. So if you hear of something being delivered badly somewhere, word can soon spread. So, you know, you'll hear, oh, that didn't quite go well, that didn't quite land well. So making sure that you've been rigorous in terms of selecting an outsource partner is absolutely key, I think, in just for bringing it all together, so to speak.
That's a really good point. You don't want to, when it's such a critical element of it, the last thing you want to do is, I suppose, poison the well. You know, when it's such a, relatively speaking, particularly in this industry, there's so many, I found myself over the years, I'll see a name and go, oh, I know that person. Oh, I know that person. I suppose from that point of view, it's a very small community in the grand scheme of things. We all know one another. So yeah, that's a really, really interesting point. I suppose on the back of that, how different are the outsourcing requirements of, for example, your small to medium-sized businesses versus your larger companies, your PLCs? How do you ensure that you've got strategies to suit across those?
No, that's a good question. So from a contact center panel perspective, what we've done is we've built a network of like over 200 outsourcers globally. And what that allows us to do is that, you know, we've got a range from, you know, really small bespoke boutique that can deliver to one set of requirements. And then, you know, looking at whether it's specialisms in inbound or outbound, and then all the way up to your large multinationals, hundreds of thousands of seats. So I think it's about really understanding the needs of a client, what the outsource requirements are, and working through that journey and going, okay, and just assisting and supporting through that. So that when you get to a point of going, okay, these are the types of outsources that we think you should be looking at. It's well-defined, it's well-understood. And, you know, we sometimes have people go, never heard of that outsourcer. Why would I speak to them about it? And, you know, it's always the decision of the client. We're just there to support. But we've got instances where someone's gone, never heard of them, why would I speak to them? And at the end of the process, guess where they've placed the work? Because it's someone who has understood those requirements, understood the needs, and, you know, and really adding value to that client.
Yeah, I think it also feeds into that whole piece around domain expertise as well. If we think around, I'm a contact center that works with a number of BPOs on a really niche particular area, and I'm expert level at that. And if an international, large international, huge business comes to me and says, look, we've got this piece of work that fits within my domain, then I'm much more comfortable, confident to deliver on that versus another small business comes to me and it's something that's way out my niche. Not to say it can't be done, but I guess that's one of the things that has to be a consideration as part of that overall landscape.
For a BPO or an outsourcer, it's about qualifying your opportunity, isn't it? So you look at something and go, that fits for me because, you know, what can I bring for that? I think probably a good marker for people is knowing when something's not for them. So making sure that you understand what your strengths are, what you can deliver, what you're good at, and playing to those strengths, I suppose, is a key part for any business. Doesn't matter what sector you're in.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting, you know, looking at the landscape of the BPO recently, I saw there was an article shared by CCP not long ago that was around whether time is running out for outsourced contact centers in the United Kingdom, with a particular note that South Africa is becoming a popular place for businesses to look at their outsourced contact centers. And I kind of want to look at this from two different positions, I suppose. Number one, why South Africa? What's happening in the industry nationally that's sending some businesses elsewhere? Is it purely cost? Is it something else? And I guess the other part of it, and I'm you know, maybe going to be a bit contentious here, but we saw this previously when a lot of contact centers were outsourced to India. What's different about this? Is it different? And, you know, is there something that we should be discussing around that?
What prompted the article was that UK outsourcers, it's a tough market. It's all of the pressures that we're seeing in the economy, you know, and labour's your biggest cost when you're running a BPO operation. So when we've got inflation, cost of living, living wage, you know, there's so many pressures. Equally, resources, it's harder to come by. You know, there's probably a record number of people who are not in employment and not looking for employment at this point in time. People are going, do you know what? I've lived through a pandemic. I don't want to carry on working. Or there might be, you know, younger folks who want a bit more flexibility. They want to be able to go travel, see the world a bit more. So I think it's made it a particularly challenging time to recruit, train, and retain good people in the UK at the moment. And that's something that we were seeing. South Africa, there's some fantastic organizations and partners that are out there that provide contact center services. There's still high levels of unemployment, so there's a lot of available labor resource in South Africa. Whether South Africa reaches a saturation point at some point in the not too distant, because ultimately you get to the place where I'm going, well, all of the best people taken. So at that point, does somebody else or another country, I should say, become a focus? The other reason South Africa seems to be working well is that couple of hours time difference. So you've got good alignment on time. You've got people with a great way about them. So I put some work out there years ago. I went and pitched to a client, and my team out there, one of them said, you know, just a turn of phrase and, you know, it just works. So do we get to a point though where people are going, well, actually, I want it back on shore with some automation? And so I think there's a lot play there. In terms of India and whether there was so many things from back in the day that went out to India that either came back or they became automated or, you know, it became self-serve, probably. And that's one of the other things that was on that journey, people being able to go online and do things themselves. I can remember getting through to, you know, having to call HSBC for something, whereas now I just go online and do that myself from my app on my phone. Job done.
Hope you're enjoying the conversation so far. If you're finding it valuable, we've got something special for you. Check out our latest industry report, a free resource filled with data-driven insights directly from the contact center landscape, created for contact center leaders looking to stay ahead of the curve. Find out more information via the link in this episode's resources.
One of the things I do want to circle back on and touch on very briefly, and I don't know if this is the case or not, but it's come up a couple of times in our conversations that we've had on the show, and that's around this perception of stigma around contact centres as an industry to work in here in the UK, whereas maybe it's seen or viewed differently in South Africa. Is there an element of truth to that?
You know what? I think it's funny, isn't it? Even though, you know, and I'm all these years into working in contact centres, I think as an industry, we're not always proud enough of what we do. So, you know, it's almost like, and first role in a contact centre until I worked out what I was going to do next. I'd just been made redundant from a role. So I'm like, okay, I was told to apply to the contact centre, otherwise I'd not get paid any benefits. It was as brutal as that. And I'm like, oh, I'll do it for 6 months and work out what to do next. I think people often fail to recognise the quality of careers that are available within contact centres, customer service. You know, I look at some of the brands I've been privileged to work with, going back to the point about United Nations. But when I started answering calls for a mobile provider back in the day, did I ever imagine that I'd be doing the work that I've done? So I think as an industry, we should have more pride. We should be proud of what we do. The fact that people in contact centres support customers when they are at the most need and lowest edges of their days shouldn't be underestimated. I suppose in reference to the point about South Africa, I think, yeah, people are. I think there's more of a kudos about working with international brands and things like that. So maybe there is that difference that that's part of the reason it's easier to recruit.
To just kind of iterate on that idea, I wonder, and forgive me, this is me just kind of thinking off the top of my head here a little, thinking about a BPO as a business, you know, whenever we talk about feelings of being a part of a team and belonging and being part of something, within an outsourced contact center, you handle multiple different businesses' customer interactions, and you have different brand voices, values, processes, hats that you need to wear across those customer journeys. How best can an independent business working on behalf of other businesses represent that brand without alienating their potential clients? I mean, how can a BPO retain their own brand identity while still being able to be agile to their clients' needs?
It's a really good point. And I think when you are sort of setting out on that journey about going, right, who are we and what do we do? It's making sure that there's that piece there that I suppose so that there's space for your brand and also your client brand. And obviously, depending on size of organization, size of the contract, size of, you know, there's so many variables in there. But if you're looking at the outsourced teams that I've seen work best, very often, if you were sat in the pub with those staff and you said, who do you work for? They wouldn't say the name of the BPO. They would say the name of the client that they're on. Now, in my local town, back in the day, if you like, because there were, must have been 5,000-6,000 of us all working for the same BPO. So if someone said, oh, I work for, you go, oh, at, and they go, oh, yeah. It's that element of having your own cultural identity, if you like, as an outsourcer and what you stand for, but allowing your staff to get close enough to your client's brand because they've got to understand it inside out because they're speaking to those customers day in, day out, and they are the eyes and ears of that brand. Those contacts and staff will probably have more contact with end customers of a client's brand than anyone within that client environment.
I'm going to add in a bit of a gotcha at this point. Is there an opportunity then for clients who decide to outsource their contact center work to a partner to actually glean insights directly by working in partnership with their outsourced contact center partner? It's not just a one-way push out to them. Should it be bi-directional with actually insights coming back in from them?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you've got to. And it's funny, you know, when you start talking about opportunities of AI and insights and the gold dust, if you like, is out there in those conversations that the agents are having with the end customers. And to be able to bring that back and process it back through and into the client environment, that is where we talked about costs earlier and the costs of having a contact center. But actually, this is where the value add comes from as well. And especially if as a outsourcer, you can be looking across multiple sectors and understanding customer behaviors and bringing that information back to the client, obviously in the right way, respectful of everybody's personal data, all that good stuff. But in the right way to be able to say, okay, we've seen this before. We've walked this path before with another client. And I think that's part of the benefit that you get from outsourcing that's not always written down somewhere.
I think that's a really key point. And to circle back to what you were saying before, it feels like there's a microcosm within a BPO, which is around the individual client. And if I kind of take that to the next level, you would want to actually actively encourage that so that your agent says, so I'm a BPO, I have a number of clients, the agents that I position on those campaigns or on those projects need to really embody the brand of that particular company as a microcosm, but under the umbrella of the wider business.
I've been part of an organization where we do best practice days. So what we would do is then bring the clients together on a subject. We'd all be able to talk and share and, you know, and out of the back of that, I ended up, two of my clients used to regularly get together without me. They were, you know, they were both in tenuously in the same sector, if you like, but they found that talking things through together and being able to bounce things off each other in terms of where they were taking their strategy gave them something that they didn't have within their own organizations. So it was a little bit at times like, you know, your parents and your in-laws going out for dinner, because you're likely to come up as the subject of conversation. But for me, knowing that those two client brands were getting something extra out of having a relationship with the outsourced contact center I was at, I think that for me, that's added value.
I agree. And I think it's important that you get those conversations fostered. I remember when I was a dialer manager, some of the most valuable conversations I had were conversations with other dialer managers. It wasn't conversations within the company as such. When you would hear so-and-so is doing this, oh, that's really clever. Have you thought about doing this? Because we've done this. And that's where you get some real ideation around those solutions that you can really focus on.
Well, I think it's considering what's core to your business. So, you know, if I make widgets as opposed to run call centers, then, you know, I might be the best person in the world at making widgets. That's great. And I'll probably, you know, have people in my team who have come from other places that have brought knowledge with them and all things like that. If you're running contact centers, does it make more sense to do it yourself? Or does it make more sense to outsource it? If you are doing it yourself, make sure that you're working with great technology, that you're working with, you know, you might have people that you can lean on who are in the BPO space that, you know, but you can draw that knowledge from. But I think one of the things that being in outsourcing has done for me is you have to be really sharp. You've got to be absolutely on it in terms of how you're managing those customer conversations, those customer interactions, because ultimately it's what your business is about. So if you can share that experience and bring your clients on that journey, I've been through some pain. I'm sure we all have. Everybody who's worked in contact centers has had days where they've gone, really wouldn't want to do that again. Why not pay it forward? Why not share that scar tissue, those gray hairs with people? Be generous. Share. Because ultimately, what's to be gained from sort of standing on the sidelines and watching someone make the mistakes that you've had to pick up the pieces from?
I think especially if it's from very different industry verticals, you know, you get a completely different viewpoint on it, completely different focus area. And even if it is somewhere else in landscape, there's still creativity there. There's still opportunity there. And speaking of creativity and opportunity, to draw our conversation to a close today, unfortunately, I'm conscious of time. It wouldn't be a conversation in 2024 if we didn't mention AI. So, given the increase in uptake of AI and the impact on customer experience, do you see a niche emerging for outsourced contact centers that either focus in the human touch with no AI as their USP, or alternatively, on the other side of the coin, offer a very highly integrated AI solution? Do you think that we'll see a differentiation between suppliers in that sense?
For me, it's like AI and some of the things that AI can do is like, it's fantastic, isn't it? But giving someone the machine, if you like. So, you know, give me that Ferrari but won the F1 at the weekend, you know. I'm not going to get it across the line first. I'll probably stall it on the way to the grid because I've not got the experience of driving that. Equally, with any form of automation, it can be expensive. And do you want to make the mistakes of buying the wrong thing, not implementing it right? You know, so it, again, it comes back to who you partner with. Who can you work with that can help you along that journey? So I think for BPOs and outsourcers, and I think for a lot of years, it may have been counterintuitive. Hang on, I've got a big building, loads of people, loads of seats. Let's automate a load of this. For some, that might not have been a comfortable conversation or a comfortable thing to think about. So what I think outsourcers can do is help brands to implement the tech and the AI in the right spaces. Myself, I'm a big fan of facing that tech towards your internal team first. So I think we talked about cost of good people, training them, retaining them, all that. So why wouldn't you try and help them get the most possible out of their day? So why don't you use the technology to support them in delivering the best possible outcomes? So whether that's, you know, prompting and guiding in the right way, whether it's pulling the insights out and getting them back quickly, whether it's doing the auto wrap, the co-pilot piece, or doing more of the QA so that, you know what, they're getting feedback on a more regular basis. So I think there's a thousand ways that the technology could be used internally first, and then consider whether you want to turn it to your customers. So in terms of that question of that heavy personal touch, if you like, with customers, I think it's about having the right people available to have the right conversation at the right time. And in terms of the what gets automated down the line, I think for me, it carries a really big health warning. I think you've got to be really careful what you do.
Absolutely agree. I wish we could continue talking. It's been a brilliant conversation and I've really enjoyed some of those points you've raised. I think what's been interesting to me is that as we've been talking, a lot of what we've talked about hasn't just touched on BPOs or the clients of BPOs. Actually, a lot of this applies to the wider industry. And when you look at it through that lens or you consider it through that lens, I think that becomes a really compelling, some of the points that we've made. So Nev Doughty, thank you ever so much for your time today. It's been really, really enjoyable talking to you. And I do hope that we speak to you again in the future.
I look forward to it. Really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Talk Time with Max Contact. We hope today's discussion has sparked new ideas to help you advance in your contact center. To learn more about any of the topics discussed in this episode, visit www.maxcontact.com. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to leave us a rating on your favorite streaming platform to help other like-minded individuals join the conversation. Also, stay tuned for our upcoming listener questions segment. We'd love for you to participate and share your thoughts. And remember to hit the subscribe button and turn on notifications to never miss a future episode. On behalf of everyone at Max Contact, thanks for listening.